It's Celtics coverage on clnsradio.com.
Sensational move from Kyrie Irving. Oh, Hayward. Hayward lays it up and in.
Dial in right now and share your thoughts toll free 347-215-7771.
All right, a little bit of dead air never hurt anybody. That was probably 5 or 10 seconds after the intro, right? Ladies and gentlemen, welcome on in to the Boston Celtics post-game show on CLNS Media. My name is Matt Rury, and at some point I will be joined by Calvin Chamberlain. Maybe he's asleep. Maybe he forgot. Maybe he just stubbed his toe and he doesn't want to come on the show tonight. I don't know. But he will be here eventually. Celtics win tonight, so that's fun. 102-91 down in Charlotte. This was a little bit of a roller coaster of a game. And the Celtics got out to a 20-point lead and then almost lost the lead. I don't believe Charlotte ever ended up tying the game. But the Celtics did win this one, sort of going away. And there's Calvin. He decided to join us. Hello, Calvin.
Hello. Yeah, I decided to come a little late to make you wonder whether or not I was going to
show good, up. Good, good. Thank you for that. That's no problem at all. I was just about to go to Nick Sesento and just kick you off the show entirely.
Oh, you can still do that if you want.
No, I don't want to. Nick was calling in, and he's going to be one of our first couple callers here at 347-215-7771, but I'm not going to force him to stick around this entire hour just because you were a minute late. I kid. I was just finishing up saying that the Celtics sort of won this one going away, even though they had a 20-point lead and almost lost it entirely. So I don't know where you want to start here, but they closed this game pretty strongly, Calvin. So I think that if anybody was worried that the Celtics were about to fall off a cliff here because they've been playing 500 basketball, this is a game they were supposed to win, and it's a game that they ended up winning decisively 102-91. So I think I don't want to get too high on this win. It's Charlotte, and they've looked like junk for the most part of this game, but the Celtics did what they were supposed to do, and hopefully they can take this momentum into tomorrow night against Houston and steal a win there too.
Yeah, here's the thing. I didn't see the first half because of work obligations, so I didn't see them get out to a 16-point lead.
20.
Sorry, you said 20? Well, at halftime it was 16. At one point it was 20. I didn't see the motivating factors in that. So sort of the second I started watching, Charlotte made that run in the third quarter. The Celtics played a lot of lackadaisical defensive times in this game. I know Charlotte ended up with 91 points, but I thought particularly Horford, just letting guys go right by him. And I know, they had a little trouble with the size of Dwight Howard. And I think really the bigger thing even beyond all that was just the fact that Marcus Morris was out. Jaylen Brown was out. And Semi Ojeleye was out. So you really saw sort of a thinner Celtics roster play. I wouldn't necessarily want to see Shane Larkin play 24 minutes on a regular basis, even though he didn't play that bad offensively. Defensively, I still feel like he's kind of a sieve right now.
Definitely. He's a small guy.
Yeah. You wouldn't necessarily want to see Baines play more than half the game. I thought, there was a period of time in that third quarter where, the Celtics offense seemed to be, Aaron Baines' perimeter jump shots that I wasn't really excited about. Even though he was open for, one or two of those 18-footers, I still wasn't really excited about watching their offense sort of devolve into that. And I just think, their rotation was pretty screwed up tonight, and thus They were.
Yeah,
they
went to Baines on offense early in the first like three out of the first five positions or something like that. They tried going to Baines and he made a couple of them, but they tried going back to it later on and it just didn't really work out. But this is one of the biggest holes that the Celtics have, and I've praised Baines for what he's done, and I think that Daniel Theis has provided a lot on the interior for the Celtics. But when it comes down to it, you're right. You don't want these guys playing more than 25 minutes a game, 23 minutes a game, and Theis only played 17 tonight. But that's one of the spots that the Celtics still to this point need to fill. And you should give these guys credit for performing the way they have over the first half of the season because they've played very well and they've exceeded expectations, both Baines and Theis and the other bigs off the bench. But when it comes down to it, it's still a position of need for the Boston Celtics. And I think you saw that tonight, even though they were able to come up with a win. Dwight Howard, a guy to me who is basically washed up, grabbed 17 rebounds against this team. He can still grab rebounds, but he's a nomad at this point in the league. Mr. Howard is. To me, he's going to end up being a one-year contract type of player over the next few years. And I'm talking out of my ass a little right now because I didn't exactly look to see when his contract ends with Charlotte, but he's just looks and feels like that type of player that is just going to bounce around to end his career, and he's never going to win anything because he's not a great teammate and he doesn't take it seriously. But the point is, when a guy like that can still go out and play pretty well, he looked good. The Celtics made him look pretty good tonight, aside from his 18-foot jumpers that I don't even know why he's allowed to take those shots. But the point is that they need something more in the middle, and I like Baines, I like Theis, I want them to be a part of this team and perform well, but ultimately, if you're going to win a championship, you need more than that. So I think it's a good point by you as far as the minutes are concerned. I do want to go to the call lines early, so get another thought out there, okay. And then we'll open them up at 347-215-7771.
Well, I was just going to say, I think you might be surprised by how well Dwight played this year. He's actually averaging 12.5 rebounds a game. I think 15.6 points now that I'm looking at it. But what I was going to say is you look at the...
His numbers may look good, but he's not much of a winner, Calvin. Continue, go.
You're right. I agree with you, and I enjoyed your bearing of Dwight Howard. But what I was going to say was, you know, you look at the rebounding differential and you say, well, the Celtics were out-rebounded by 11, like, or rather 9. It could be worse than that. But the thing about that is that the Hornets missed 55 shots. Like, you know what I mean? So if you, again... this is why I don't like rebounding numbers just as a vacuum, because if you look at rebound percentage, the Hornets were getting up. The Hornets got 19 offensive rebounds in this game. The Celtics got 5. The Celtics scored 0 second chance points through 3 quarters, and the Hornets, you know, continuing to get at the basket, and the Celtics' inability to rebound in this game basically allowed the Hornets to get back. It's not like they ever really shot that well in this game. You know, part of it was Dwight's. Like, you know, the inability for them to really have somebody to match up against Dwight. And I think, yeah, it is still a weakness in this team, you know, matching up against the traditional center type. And we've talked about before, like, if they see a guy like Drummond in the playoffs, is it going to be hard for this particular team? Other than that, in the East, I guess there's not really anybody, right? But,
right.
But you know, and I think they had a hard time guarding that traditional big, and they were really getting up offensive boards. Not even necessarily just to Dwight, I think, but Dwight's sort of center of gravity allowed guys like Marvin Williams and Kid Gilchrist to get rebounds that they wouldn't normally get, because, you know, the Celtics sort of had to over-rotate to try to stop Howard, and I really think that's what kept Charlotte around until Jason Tatum sort of had his moment in the fourth quarter of really, you know, getting out of the break quickly and making fast moves and... you know, he got a lot of easy buckets, and that really sort of separated them. That and the fact that Charlotte was, first of all, I'm shocked by how bad Kid Gilchrist's decision making is. Just like his inability to like find cutters or passers when he has the ball in his hand. That really hurts him. And
yeah, he's a strange player. I mean, his awareness is kind of pretty, it's on the downside of things. It's on the low end of the scale. And I didn't really realize that about him until really this year, in watching a couple of their games. I've watched Charlotte a little bit more, believe it or not, than I have in the past years. Why you would want to watch Charlotte, I don't know, but I've just done it. He seems like the typical athletic player that just doesn't necessarily get it, you know, he kind of just wants to be out there trying to use his athleticism to win games. And it's like Gerald Green, you know, way back in the day, but more of a better defensive player. Like Kidd Gilchrist is pretty good defensively just because he's so long and stuff when he's focused. But for the most part, I don't know. He's a strange player. I can't figure him out right now.
Yeah, I was thinking Jeff Green when you said Gerald Green. But Cho Green works as well, I guess, except he's not as much of a natural scorer as Gerald Green. Or even Jeff
Sure, Green. I think Jeff Green was a better scorer as well. Anyway, Kidd Gilchrist has a pretty poor offensive game, even though he shot well tonight. Overall, not very good. Let's go to the defense, 347-215-7771. And before we hit up Vinny, who's been waiting for a few minutes, I just remind you that this show is brought to you by DraftKings. I'll tell you a little bit more about that after this call. Vinny, my man, you were waiting since before we even connected to this show. Celtics win tonight. How you doing?
Doing fine. Nothing up, nothing new. Just watching. It's game 34 of the year. It's a long time till, you know,
ho
the end of the season.
Ho-hum, yeah. Another Celtics game. Calvin, I don't know if you've heard from Vinny or not, but Vinny is definitely the most grounded Celtics fan that calls this network. That's for 100% for sure.
Yeah, I haven't heard from him, but you definitely sound like you're not particularly enthusiastic about this win tonight.
I'm more of a pessimist, so if we lost today, I'd be scared and sad and nervous and contemplating my place in the world. But, we touched on Tatum helping us tonight, but in that third quarter when the Celtics couldn't do anything, Tito did a great job stepping in and keeping the Celtics head above water when it looked like their legs were dead and they were just making the wrong plays at the wrong time. Tito was really nice for it. It was one of those nights where he legitimately could have been, he can be the best bench player on our team, you know, instead of Daniel Theis being the best bench player on our team. You know what I mean? If only he could put it together more consistently.
Actually, this game ended so early that I was able to catch the post-game comments, and Scalabrine gave Rozier his player of the game. So that's who NBC Sports Boston put up as their player of the game tonight. So you're right on with them, Vinny, because he had a pretty solid game. He came in, and his scoring wasn't off the charts, but he was scoring at the right times. He was taking good shots. He played well within the flow of the offense. You remember that one play they kept replaying where he sort of had this sort of hesitation dribble and basically faked out the defense and laid it in. It was a really nice play where he looked like he absolutely could have been out of control if he had just moved that ball half an inch in a different direction, and it was just a perfect play. Rozier was on his game tonight for sure.
He had good times on that alley-oop to Tatum as well.
Oh, that was wonderful. That was great. That's what we needed. He looked like
a great
point guard tonight. Yeah, he looked like a point guard. He was running the offense, and I thought he was just a two guard.
So this is something that I think people should start to be aware of here, guys. Correct me if I'm wrong. I'm going to go look this up. I got to check his contract because people keep talking about Marcus Smart leaving and being the guard that will be the odd man out. But Terry Rozier is starting to look like he's going to be a player in this league, and he has the confidence to be a player in this league. And I think Danny Ainge kept him over Avery Bradley for a reason other than just money. I think he really likes Terry Rozier. So it'll be interesting to see. He's got an option that goes through next season. So I'm really curious to see what they do with Marcus Smart now, because they may be trying to line it up so that it's Rozier, Tatum, Brown, And whoever else is still here, and Rozier would basically be acting as insurance to make sure that you can keep, or just in case you don't keep Kyrie for an extension. But I think that the Celtics are going to plan on keeping this guy, and he has the confidence to become a starter in this league. He wants to be a starter in this league. So just something to look out for over the next year or two, because if he ends up leaving the Celtics, they may be in trouble as far as a backup point guard is concerned.
Well, he's under team control for a very long time. I don't think he's going to hit restricted free agency till 2020, and I think he's going to have a small cap hold because he was taken so late. I don't think he's going to leave. I think we got him. And
hope so.
There's a little story I have with that. Oh, my bad.
Yeah.
But
so after
I have a
next
story
season.
On this. Yeah, it'll be fine. We're going to keep him. Marcus Smart is the one that I think might be going away. But when that whole hoopla was going on with Kobe Altman and the Cleveland Cavaliers, the Celtics, there was rumors about like them offering Rozier to just make sure the Kyrie deal went. Celtics really liked Kyrie. I mean, you know, Tito, they liked Rozier. They wanted to keep him, and I don't think they would give him up as a throw-in. I think they didn't want to give him up in the deal. They had their, like, limits. They had their boundaries. I think they really do like Rozier, and they were excited for him coming in to this season to fill in that Evan Turner / Avery Bradley role. He's on these nights, he can be a really good player. He's like one of the best rebounding guards in the league. He might be one of the best, you know. That's on hubris. I think that's fact.
No, I think it is too. He's one of the only guys that consistently is crashing the boards. And actually, something not to steal from NBC Sports Boston again, but I'll credit them. Tommy Heinsohn before the game said that Celtics guards just haven't been rebounding as much recently as they were at the beginning of the season, and that's part of the reason that the entire team rebounding is down. But Rozier is one of the guys that has been consistently rebounding. He's still a 4-5 rebound guy every night, and for a guard, that's impressive in this league at this point. So I like what you're putting down there. Go ahead, Calvin.
Yeah, Rozier had a good offensive game tonight, but I think if we're talking big picture, we can't overlook the fact that he's been a disaster shooting the ball this season. I mean, he's essentially as bad of a shooter as Marcus Smart, essentially, this year, and I feel like it's sort of been an underreported fact because he's sort of improved defensively and improved on the boards.
Yep.
He has improved defensively.
Great rebounder, but he's still not as good defensively as Marcus Smart, but he's a better ball handler, right? He's a better pure point guard as far as passing is concerned and stuff like that, although Marcus Smart has his head up all the time. The comparison between these two guys is going to be constant for the next 2 years. I guarantee it.
Oh,
yeah, but his shooting has been disastrous this year overall. So I don't think we can overlook that. He had a good game tonight, but I don't think we can overlook that fact.
Oh, 100%. But, you know, Marcus Smart suiting is cataclysmic. So, what do you want? Disaster or cataclysm?
That's the thing about, and that's why I sort of didn't mind Marcus Smart being in the starting line, because those guys spend a lot of time together, and I feel like when there are times out there on the court, you know, when Rozier is playing with Smart in the second unit, where the shooting is just dive bombs, and you know the team can't score at all. And they're out there with guys like Yabusele and Theis, and then it's just like, you know, what is going on with the offense? I'd like to see sort of maybe a little more time for a guy like Tatum with the second unit, for example, because he's not a guy who always he doesn't, as well as he's played this year, he's not a guy who always gets as many shots as he probably deserves at this point, right? So maybe you figure out a way to get a guy like him out there, or maybe Jalen when he's healthy. Even that Jalen's kind of his offense has slipped a little bit lately, or at least his offensive
he's hit or miss.
Yeah, but his aggressiveness has slipped.
That was my complaint about Jalen Brown. I wish Ty Ray would call in at this point in the show, because it's going to be the Jalen Brown Jason Tatum comparison again. And I think Jalen Brown is the more inconsistent player. Every time this comes up, he gets all defensive about Jalen Brown. Listen, I'm not bashing Jaylen Brown. I'm not tearing down Jaylen Brown. I'm not saying to get rid of Jaylen Brown. I'm not saying he's going to be a bad player. I'm not saying anything really negative about Jaylen Brown. I'm just saying I think Tatum is going to be better. I think he's going to be the more he's already the more polished offensive player. He's more consistent, even though he's had some down games this year. And I just overall, that's how I feel. And maybe I'm preempting a defense. This is a defense mechanism every time this topic comes up. So I'm just projecting a little bit. But Jaylen Brown is going to be great. He's already pretty solid for. He's exceeded expectations in my mind anyway, but Jason Tatum just looks like the better player to me all around. Vinny, get another thought in there, and we're going to move on.
All right. What do you think about these comparisons for Jason Tatum? I got four. Carmelo, Paul Pierce, James Worthy, and Jamal Wilkes. Go old school Jamal Wilkes from the Warriors and the Lakers. And
all right.
Jason Tatum is averaging two less shots attempts than Jaylen Brown. I don't like that. I want more. I don't know why they can't get him into the offense more.
They're starting to do it over the past couple of games, Vinny. I promise you. They're starting
God
to do it. Stevens
do
wants
it.
More practices so they can get Tatum the ball more. They know he needs the ball. He's efficient. He needs the ball. I agree with you. Thanks for calling, man. Calvin, I'm going to defer to you on this one because I think the Worthy-Wilkes comparison is a little bit aggressive, but you're the Laker, the resident Laker fan here. So how do you feel about that? Those are four very solid names to compare to a rookie.
Yeah, I like Pierce because of the footwork. I think the thing I like about Jaylen Brown most is the footwork and his first step. His first step to me compares to Worthy. I think that he's probably not Worthy at the rim, at least not yet. I don't like Carmelo because Carmelo is a little bit bulkier and sort of uses his strength in a way that Jaylen Brown, it's not quite.
Tatum. We're talking about Tatum. You said Brown twice.
I'm sorry, Tatum. I'm sorry. I meant to say Tatum both times. So I meant Tatum. My brain said Brown because I wanted a comment on Brown Tatum.
That's all right. You can get a comment in on Brown. You've got another 35 minutes here. Finish this Tatum thought.
Yeah, well, I think the Tatum Carmelo comparison, I just think Carmelo is a little bit bulkier and a guy who would, like, you know, bully guys a little bit more on the post and a little bit more. I like, in terms of having the turnaround jumper, I understand the Carmelo comparison. I just don't like it quite as much as maybe the Pierce and probably Jamal Wilkes are the two that I like the most.
Yeah, I think that it's pretty good. I'm not even going to touch the James Worthy thing. I think that that's a Hall of Fame player at this point, so there's a long way to go there. Maybe there's shades. But I think Pierce is going to be a Hall of Fame player as well, so that is also a long way to go. But I think they're different in a couple of different ways. I actually, if he bulks up, I actually kind of like the Carmelo comparison. Although, listen, we're talking about another Hall of Fame player right there with Carmelo Anthony. I don't know if Jamal Wilkes is in the Hall of Fame. Forgive me. But Carmelo knows how to use his large frame. Jason Tatum still doesn't know how to use the frame that he's got. You see him committing offensive fouls that are basically egregious, and he sort of looks up to the sky, throws his hands up, and it's like, no, that's a foul, buddy. Once he learns where to be and how to position himself in the NBA, I think that he's going to be more of that Carmelo type of player, especially if he can get that step back knockdown shot to fall more often than not.
To be fair to Jason Tatum, you know, Carmelo and James Worthy, like, and again, it's early in his career, so who knows? Let's not forget that Marcus Smart shot 40% from three in his rookie year. But if he continues with, you know, the way he's been shooting so far through the course of you know, the beginning part of this season, then that's already a better shooter than Carmelo or James Worthy. But I don't want to. It's premature to, you know, come down on that point one way or the other.
Right.
As far as the Jaylen Brown, are you going to go to somebody else?
Are you going to be able to hold that thought?
I can go either way. That's why I'm asking you. It just,
all right. Why don't you hold that thought? Because I want to just want to remind people about DraftKings, because I promised them
do
I
it.
Would. obviously the season is up and running, and if you were anything as far as a fantasy basketball player is concerned, you should probably check out DraftKings.com, because you don't have to do it weekly. You don't have to do it for the whole season. You can do it one day at a time, one game at a time, one night at a time. Pick the players that you want. Choose from public contests and get some huge cash prizes. You can also set up private leagues. So if you knew me and Calvin and you wanted to try and take our money by drafting players better than us, maybe you could do that, but we'd probably beat you. They have beginner and casual contests where you'll play against people of a similar skill level. And the best part is, like I said, you get a new team every single day. You can pick your team today. Maybe you don't want to play tomorrow. You play the next day, get an entirely new team, and you can win cash by doing it. So here we go. You're going to use the code CLNS at DraftKings.com. You're going to play for free with your first deposit, and you're going to be able to get your share of $10,000 in total prizes next time you play, whether it's later tonight, a couple of late games starting here shortly, or it's tomorrow. Use that code CLNS at DraftKings.com and pick your lineup, and you'll win some money if you're any good at it, of course. This is the game inside the game. Go to DraftKings.com and use the code CLNS. There is a minimum $5 deposit required, but you're not going to have to use that when you play your first game. And then you're going to win, and then you're going to get it back out of there. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. 347-215-7771 is the phone number. I made him wait all this time after he was ready to be my co-host because you were late, Calvin. So hold your Jaylen Brown thought. We're going to Nick Sesento. What's up, buddy?
Listen up, Hoops fans. Basketball season is back. And now Hardwood Heroes have returned to action, it's time for you to put your fantasy knowledge to the test and win huge cash prizes every night.
Is this really the way you're going with this right now?
I'm just messing with you. I thought I'd help you out with the read. You know, playing one-day fantasy basketball at DraftKings.com is just one of my favorite hobbies. I'm just so jazzed up that we actually have DraftKings as one of our sponsors here at CLNS Media that I just had to, you know, jump in there with some of the read myself. But, no, you guys already covered – I wouldn't have done that if you hadn't already preempted everything that I wanted to talk about. So, Terry Rozier. Terry Rozier, I think you guys know that I've been a Terry Rozier fan for the longest, and it's been one of the talking points that I've frequently referred to when I happen to either call into the show or doing, you know, on the spot hosting duties when one of our other hosts don't show up, like Calvin Chamberlain. I'll do the Marcus Smart Terry Rozier comparison, and Marcus Smart is leaving after this season, or he's going to get a double figure contract offer from another team in restricted free agency, and the Boston Celtics aren't going to keep him around because they have Terry Rozier still on the roster. And that's basically, I think, now people are starting to come around to my position on that.
Wait, what is your position? That he's going to leave?
No, that I think that Danny Ainge is planning on keeping Terry Rozier for at least one more year of his rookie contract, for the last year of his rookie contract, and let Marcus Smart just, you know, walk away. Gordon Hayward's going to come back. You know, Marcus Smart, is as much as we love to see him die for loose balls, I just don't think that he is traditionally efficient enough. He doesn't put the ball in the basket consistently enough to justify a $10-12 million contract.
Dwight Howard tonight? Dwight Howard stopped in his tracks. Marcus Smart didn't budge.
He does have his unique moments. That's absolutely true.
I know. Is that Dwight Howard being soft or Marcus Smart being a tough guy or both? Like, what is that? He just pushes bigger guys around. He was guarding Porzingis on last week against the Knicks. And he's been doing that against the Knicks for a couple of years now. I think he's valuable in a lot of different ways. I just don't think he's worth the money that he's going to command on the open market.
Yeah, and as radio it is, as it is for you, Nick, to make it a Marcus Smart versus Terry Rozier thing, like Terry Rozier has no impact on Marcus Smart because he's on that rookie deal. He's going to come back no matter what. Will he be back 2 years from now? Just off the top of my head, straight up right now, I mean, it depends on how much he asked for. But considering where the Celtics are going to be, like, cap wise, and the fact that they're going to have to pay Jaylen Brown at that point, I'm just going to say they're probably not bringing back Terry Rozier either.
So it's like the Terry Rozier Smart comparison to me is almost irrelevant. But Smart, I think if Smart doesn't come back, it's just a casualty of the cap. You can't pay everybody. You know, I think Pop, like Smart is a guy who does have value.
I don't know, Calvin. I don't think that it is necessarily the most astute basketball position to say that, you know, what's happening with one player in a similar position on a roster has no bearing on whether or not the team keeps another player playing a very similar position. I think asserting that, you know, Terry Rozier's presence doesn't affect Danny Ainge's decision making when it comes to whether or not to pay Marcus Smart, you know, that's not a position that I can agree with. Obviously, Terry Rozier being there, sure, he's going to be there regardless because he has one more year on his rookie contract. He's a productive player for little bit of money, but the fact that he's there allows Danny Ainge to then think about being flexible with Marcus Smart where he may not have otherwise been able to.
Because Marcus Smart doesn't play
the same type of game as Terry Rozier. First of all,
Wait a minute, hold on. We were just saying how they were similar in some ways, but vastly different in others.
Similar in the fact that they can't shoot. Okay, but
Terry Rozier's numbers are a little bit better than that, though.
He's shooting 36% from three, I think.
Rozier's
shooting 36%
from three on the year.
Okay, that's fine. That means he's shooting 38% from two. So that's still not great.
For a 3-and-D guy.
Calvin, I don't know how you can argue that their games are not very similar. I mean, Marcus Smart is more of a dive-on-the-floor type of player. Terry Rozier is probably a guy that has a little bit better control of the basketball than Marcus Smart does, but Smart has more assists. They're similar as far as rebounds are concerned. Smart's scoring more points this year. I think overall they're very, very similar, and it's kind of a race between the two of them to see who earns the next max contract for a guard for the Boston Celtics. And I mean, maybe max contract
is Marcus Smart
a little bit strong, but the next big contract as far as a guard is concerned, I think it's one of these two guys.
Marcus Smart is a bigger, stronger, slower player who mostly guards wings. Rozier mostly guards smaller guards. Granted, Rozier crashes the boards pretty well offensively, but they play in different positions on the floor. I understand that they're both, you know, quote point guards, but I think that whether or not Rozier was on this team, the decision to bring back Smart is based around, look, if the Celtics do bring back Smart, it's because of his defensive versatility and the fact that he's a pretty good secondary playmaker. That element you know Rozier can do somewhat, but I don't think Rozier has Marcus Smart's court vision at this point, even though he's a better ball handler. He's not a better guy. He's not better in terms of court vision.
Creator.
He's not a better creator.
He's really not.
So, yeah, I mean, he creates for himself better than Marcus Smart. There's no question about that.
Absolutely.
In terms of creating for teams, so I don't think they're that similar. But really, to me, I don't see how the decision to having Rozier on the team is a no-brainer because he's on his rookie deal, and unless he could get, you know, packaged off and as part of some trade, I wouldn't be shocked about that. But otherwise, obviously, because they can have him on the team for no money and he's a valuable player, they're going to bring him back. The decision to bring back Smart is going to come down entirely to, you know, one, whether they're going to have the money to do so, how much money he's going to come in on the open market, and whether or not they think that's worth it. I don't really see how Rozier factors into that at all.
So let me ask you a question. How often do restricted free agents sign a one-year contract? Or
how often?
Is there any possibility, do you think, that would happen with Marcus Smart here? Because he likes being here, and he wants to play for Stevens, and he just – because wouldn't he be restricted again after that 1 year?
No, he would.
The only time that I've ever heard of that happening, Rory, is when there's been a projected cap jump, and players like LeBron James are the big name players that can squeeze more money out of, you know, whatever the cap situation is going to be in the upcoming year, in the foreseeable future. Like we saw in the previous years, there was a lot of players signing, you know, 1 year contracts just to wait out the year until they could get that next year when they knew the salary cap was going to jump. And I don't know if that's going to happen again, or if Terry Rozier or Marcus Smart are those type of players that are really going to, you know, play that type of game. I think that Marcus Smart's going to take, you know, if it were up to him, take the place that pays him the most money, not, you know, not necessarily
a
hometown discount.
Oh,
but
so that, I mean, I'm not trying to ask whether teams are I'm not trying to say whether teams would pay him more. Obviously, they're going to pay him more. But Calvin, correct this. Go ahead.
Yeah, no. This is a situation where it actually happens. Okay, when teams look, when you offer a team a restricted free agent contract, it ties up your cap space for a certain number of days. It used to be 5 days. I think they shortened it to 3 days. It ties up your cap space for that period of time until while the Celtics in the Marcus Smart situation has time to match. So if other teams feel like other teams don't go after restricted free agents a lot of the time because they, unless it's a guy who's super good, but a guy like Marcus Smart is not necessarily a guy who a team's going to offer a lot of money to because, they might if they feel like the Celtics are going to let him go, but if they feel like the Celtics are going to match, so what happens in this, in the scenario where a guy signs his qualifying offer, it's because the Celtics, this happened with Greg Monroe. This happened with Eric Bledsoe. What happens is
Nerlens Noel is where I was going with it.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, the team tries to make a team friendly offer. Yeah, Nerlens Noel is a perfect example. They offered 4 years, $70 million. Nerlens Noel thought it wasn't enough, but because he was on a restricted free agent contract situation, no other team even made him a contract offer. So he's playing. So he played this year out under the idea that because once you sign the qualifying offer, which instead of getting $470 million,
this is what I'm hoping is going to happen with Marcus Smart. I mean, it sounds bad because what's going on with Nerlens Noel is kind of a bad situation. But I kind of want Marcus Smart to be here for another year and see what happens after that.
Just understand when that happens. The player usually hates the team for it, and is pretty unlikely.
Right.
Yeah, because he's playing for peanuts again when the team is essentially holding him hostage. So usually in that scenario, the player turns against the team, and I don't know. Maybe Marcus Smart is a guy who like.
It's like the franchise tag in football, kind of.
Yep.
Yeah, except the difference is when you get franchise tagged in football, you get the average of the top five players at your position.
So a lot of
you get good money.
Yeah. When you sign your qualifying offer, it's essentially like you're signing another year of being on your rookie contract instead of hitting real free agency. So you just do that to become an unrestricted guy after the year, but it's still infuriating for the player. There's no chance Nerlens Noel goes back to Dallas next year.
Certainly not. This is where maybe my green goggles are getting in the way, and I would think that Marcus Smart would still consider coming back here. But you're right. This is a business, and he even if that were to happen, he probably would not be here after that, and they would still be looking at Terry Rozier. I just think it would be an interesting dynamic to look at, and I do like what Marcus Smart brings to the table. I just think he's going to be overpaid after next season.
Yeah. How about looking at it from a more micro perspective? And I think we've seen two fantastic performances from Terry Rozier now in a row. I know that's nothing, you know, to like throw a party about, but, you know, we've seen Terry Rozier step up and hit some big shots. Of course, you've seen Marcus Smart step up and hit big shots as well. I don't know if I necessarily like them both on the court together as a backcourt tandem for the second unit.
I agree.
I don't know if that, you know, if that excites me very much, but, you know, who do you think is going to emerge out of these two players as that guy for the second unit that's going to basically be the, you know, the lift the second unit to be that punch, that spark plug, you know, for the second unit? Because especially offensively, I just don't see Marcus Smart as having that ability. I don't see Marcus Smart being able to get to the hoop as frequently as Terry Rozier does and finish with as much confidence as Terry Rozier does.
Yeah.
And you can see the way Terry Rozier is shooting that he even has more confidence in his jump shot than Marcus Smart, which is borne out by his stats. He's hitting 36% from three, which, I mean, is for a guy that's expected to basically do just that, 3-and-D and maybe a hard push. Really fast
when,
in the dribble.
In an ideal world, they're going to be on the floor at the same time. Rozier's going to be the offensive guy. Smart's going to be the defensive guy, and they both will do a little bit of the other. You know what I mean, Calvin?
They just got to find a balance that works.
They really got to find a balance that works because it's not there yet.
I think, like it or not, it's going to be Smart because Smart is the one who has the green light for Brad Stevens. Smart is the guy who, like, Smart is the one with the irrational confidence.
Rozier has a green light.
Bad, taking bad shots every game. Well, like there's and we've heard quotes from Brad Stevens.
Come on, they all have a green light.
What's that? They both have a well, both that's
they
fine,
all
but
they all
Marcus
every
Marcus,
single Celtic has a green light. Marcus Morris has a green light. Shane Larkin has a green light.
No,
Yabusele's got a damn green light, Calvin. They all have a green light. Let's not lie.
Marcus Smart uses that green light. Marcus Smart uses that green light way more than Mosier. If that's what you want to say, they all have a green light. That's fine.
He abuses his green light.
Sure. Okay,
he ignores the yellow light sometimes.
Yeah, fine. I would
he
agree with
the
you
yellow
there
light
as well. And that goes into a complaint that I've had about Marcus Smart for a long time, is that he takes bad shots.
Absolutely.
Right, but
go ahead.
The point is his defensive versatility and the fact that he's going to play big minutes in games, bigger minutes than Mosier, let's be honest. Mosier's mostly playing second unit
ball
minutes,
handling minutes.
Going
yes.
to the tree. Yeah. Marcus Smart is out on the floor in the fourth quarter, still taking those bad shots in plenty of situations. you can say it would be nice if Rozier was the guy to like take over that scoring load, but it's not going to happen because Brad Stevens seems to be like he wants to keep Marcus Smart happy, and he seems to think that like his aggressiveness sort of infiltrates all aspects of his game, and the notion seems to be like if I allow him to be this out of control offensively, like that's also what has him flying over taking charges defensively.
Yep.
I don't know. I've seen quotes sort of not directly saying that, but to that effect of like I don't want to hold back who this guy is, and thus like that's what's going to happen.
But two of nine from the field, 1 of 4 from three. No turnovers. +4. He's +4, guys. 5 points on the game. +4. So that's what people like to say about Marcus Smart. He's a positive. He's a plus. He's a plus. But guess what? The Celtics were up by 20 and they won by 11. Most players on the team should be a plus, and only two guys were a minus. So let's not talk about plus minus when defending Marcus Smart, Mr. Strawman in the corner. Okay. The other thing is, when Celtics fans see this guy chucking up shots and he goes 5 of 9, or he goes 7 of 12, or even like 4 of 6, look at Marcus Smart. He's great offensively. He scored 15 points. But then when he goes 2 of 9, it's like, look at Marcus Smart. He grabbed 5 rebounds and it was a +4. You got to be consistent about this stuff. Look at it all at the same time. And as much praise as I give Marcus Smart in a lot of different areas, I am always, I think, for the rest of his career, whether he's on this team or not, going to be critical of his shot selection, which plays into his field goal percentage. If this guy would just take better shots, he would have such a better shooting percentage. And people like me who complain about that stuff would have nothing to complain about. So I hope he just takes a lesson one day and just starts shooting better shots. But no, the reins are off with this team. Nick, the reins are off. Brad Stevens lets anybody
that monologue. Matt, you took my monologue like right out of my mouth pretty much, because it's usually I who goes on the long savage rant against Marcus Smart in his lack of shooting discretion and whatnot. But I'm glad that you took the place for me. But I also like the discussion about the Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, and I'm just happy. I'm not going to get into which one I take. I think Jason Tatum probably projects into a nicer player, long term. But I think they're very different players on the wing. I think Jaylen Brown more athletic, Jason Tatum a little bit more finesse. But I'm just glad that decision doesn't have to be made for at least another 2 years, because I believe Jaylen Brown is on has 2 years left after this one on his rookie contract, and Jason Tatum is still a rookie. I just wouldn't let go of either one of them for almost anything. Whenever I hear these, trade talks come up and trade talks for bigger players, and I'm not even going to mention them because I don't like to humor that stuff. When you start talking about, losing Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, I think that's a bad move, because I think versatile, athletic wings that can play defense and hit the three are crucial crucial to winning in today's NBA, in the modern NBA, alongside an elite point guard that can also shoot and create shots for themselves, and the Boston Celtics obviously have that. I think those are the most important. You can never have enough of athletic wings like that, and those are the guys that really make teams successful. So I hope they can find a way to keep both of those guys. I think they're different enough when they cover, you know, enough, you know, different ground and contribute enough, you know, unique talents that the Boston Celtics would be, you know, do really well to keep both of them around. And Jason Tatum especially, I mean the guy,
yeah,
unlimited future.
We'll have to wait and see.
It's way too early to talk about whether or not you should keep
one
of those guys. First of all, we don't even know
there's a lot of moving pieces on this roster every year.
And we don't know how they play with Hayward. We don't know. You know, you said you don't want to name names out there, but there's certainly names out there that exist that you would move, you know, Tatum and Brown for in a heartbeat. But maybe in your mind
Davis,
there aren't. But there are certain guys. So yeah. But that doesn't mean that's realistic or regardless, either way, they're both on the rookie deals. They're both going to be around for a while, like you said. So I don't even see the point. We can say which one is better, and I think the devil's advocate argument, you know, with Brown is there have been stretches in the season where he has been, especially, you know, during their run of defensive dominance, where you can argue that Jalen Brown was their best defensive player. Like, He showed the versatility that Marcus Smart showed defensively, except he was bigger. You saw him guarding fours, you saw him guarding twos, in a way that, like, with an aggressiveness that, like, you know, Jason Tatum hasn't, even though he's been, you know, fine defensively, he hasn't been Jalen Brown awesome defensively. Even though I think the argument has really tilted towards Tatum in recent weeks as Jalen Brown's dealing with injuries and sort of his aggressiveness has died down a little bit.
I think defensively, Jason Tatum is probably a better help defender. He's better at coming from the help side, and I think Jalen Brown is better face-up defending. You've seen him face up his defenders, face up the offensive players like Steph Curry. You've seen him face up and even play post defense against LeBron James. Not that he's, you know, completely, you know, clamped them up, not that he completely shut them down, but he played effective defense, as effective as you'd expect from a guy who was playing LeBron James, D-ing LeBron James up in the Eastern Conference Finals during his rookie season. You know what I mean? And I would agree with you that I think there have been stretches in this season where Jalen Brown has been the Boston Celtics' best defensive player, and he shows that, you know, that versatility that Marcus Smart has, but has the length in the size to basically, I mean, if he can cover, you know, half the point guards in the league being, you know, six foot, you know, eight or whatever it is that they measure him at, with his long arms. I mean, there's not very much the guy can't do short of, you know, guarding the occasional dinosaur center like Andre Drummond or whoever else it is, you know, Johnson from the Clippers. You know, he can guard everybody else.
I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. I feel like there's a difference between guarding a guy like Porzingis at that height and a guy like Drummond at that height. Just because Drummond is more of a rebounder and a bruiser, and he's really going to push back, whereas Porzingis is just floating around trying to get his shot up, you know? Like, I think it's a lot easier to push around a guy like that, which is where I would be a little bit more skeptical of especially a playoff series against a guy like Drummond. All right, boys, we got about 10 minutes left. Nick, thanks for hanging around. If you want to hang around for the rest of it, feel free. Otherwise, I'll let you go. I got to look up and see who is hosting the next one. I thought I already looked that up. Damn.
It's
anyway.
The Syracuse boys for the next show, the Houston show, which is tomorrow night. It's Bobby Manning and his friends from Syracuse, Rubino and Taylor. They're
beautiful.
Hosting, next show.
Beautiful.
And
that should be fun because that's a good game against the Houston Rockets.
Nice round table.
Himself and friends.
Yeah, I'm just calling that out as being ridiculous, but go on.
What's that? The Syracuse friends? The Syracuse crew?
The Syracuse squad is doing a game? Yeah.
Listen, Calvin.
Pretty cool.
The way that hosts bail around here and or don't let this kid know when they're not going to be able to do it, myself included, I failed to tell him. I mean, I didn't bail it the day of. I gave him a few days' notice, but I screwed up one of the nights. Like, I don't blame him for scheduling whoever the heck he can to get on these airwaves, because I was doing this for 5-6 years. I know how tough it is to sometimes get people to do things, especially around the holidays. So Bobby can handle it. Bobby's a great host. He's gonna knock this one out of the park. So you keep your naysaying attitude away from here.
I've worked with all three of them. I think they're all fantastic. Bobby Manning, obviously, he's taken over the reins, doing a lot of the scheduling for the CLNS Media, or all of the scheduling for the CLNS Media Boston Celtics postgame show, and you got to give him credit for being able to juggle all that along with a full-time schedule at Syracuse University. But I've worked with Taylor McLeod as well, and Taylor is really good. He does a fantastic job on the postgame show, and Andrew Rubino as well. They're all good. You know, I mean, I don't know what the criticism would be, maybe nepotism, but hey. You know, that sometimes that's the way things work, and if they do a good job, then that criticism isn't really, you know, what I'm saying, all that important.
Nepotism.
As long as it's not
such big
a garbage show,
around here.
They do a fantastic job. Yep.
All right, Nick. Thanks for calling in, bud.
No problem. Appreciate it.
Talk to you soon. Always hooking us up with some good stuff there, Calvin. All right, we got about 10 minutes left here. 347-215-7771. We don't have to take the entire time. Is there anything else that you have pressing that you want to get out there? Because you know what? I'm going to plug our show right now. We didn't have it last night because I was feeling like crap, trying to get over a little bit of a cold. Careless Whispers, Tuesdays, 9 p.m., baby. Here we go. Let's get it going again, Calvin. We got to be more regular about this so people can listen. But what else is on your mind this week?
This week?
Yeah, man, we didn't do a show last night. I'm giving you a chance to plug our own damn show on the CLNS postgame show. So
yeah, we do have a general post, general sports podcast called Careless Whispers. We do every Tuesday. I didn't wrangle up any topics because you said you were not interested. I'm sure we would have talked somewhat about the Celtics. I'm curious to know how you feel about Gordon Hayward's progress and.
Yeah.
So where are you at with, you know, whether or not he should play this year? I still think he shouldn't.
Man, I'm just going to be saying that until he steps foot on the court. Let's go there, though, for the last few minutes of this show. I don't see any reason to put him in a position to come back less than 100%. And, I mean, if he feels like he's 100% in March or in April and he wants to play a few games towards the end of the regular season, maybe that's okay. Maybe just sort of give him a taste of NBA basketball again. But if you're throwing him into a playoff series, into a playoff scenario right away, I just don't think that's smart. I think he needs reps. I think he needs more. He would need time to get up to speed. I think if it's that far into the season and that far along, and it would be more disruptive than anything. And as great of a player as he is, and as much as I want him to come back as quickly as possible, I think you have to wait until you're fully healed as much as you can be from a surgery like this. And he's not the player that's going to put them over the top to win the NBA championship. So don't put him in a position to hurt himself even further and disrupt what's going on. I say just ride it out and let it be. But I'm starting to allow myself to think that maybe he'll play a few games towards the end of the regular season. But honestly, shut him down for the playoffs. Please don't let him play in the playoffs. It's just a different game.
I guess I would be okay now that I took another few seconds to think about it, I think the problem with giving him, you know, some late regular season minutes is he's going to be a competitive guy, and he's not going to be happy if then it reverts back to a playoff situation where he's a guy who's not getting minutes. But I also feel like the regular season, regular season is designed for teams to figure out their rotation, four teams to figure out how to play together, run sets, involving specific guys, you know, routine, getting things down over and over again. And Gordon Hayward is a guy who is new to this basketball team. Let's not forget that it's not Blake Griffin coming back to the Clippers with Chris Paul and DeAndre Jordan. It's a guy who, you know, played one preseason with the Boston Celtics and got hurt in the first game of the regular season. I think it's a mistake to try to bring him back. Even just from an integration standpoint, Tatum has played so well this year so far. You know, Brown, again, we already talked about them. By the time the playoffs roll around, the Celtics are going to be in that groove. They're going to know exactly what they want to do. And trying to bring back a piece of a guy, again, who might not be 100%, I don't mean to be scare tactic guy, but, like, I just always in this scenario, I think about Grant Hill coming back off that broken foot and never being the same player. I don't see the advantage in it in any respect. So I really hope they don't do it. But, you know, I guess if he wants to do it, what are they going to say to him? You know, don't come back? So I get why if he
might
come back. I just, yeah. You think they will? I feel like
they might
won't
say it. They might say it. I would think that. So this I didn't want to mention the Isaiah Thomas thing tonight because there's really no reason to talk about him. He's not a Celtic anymore, but his name has been coming up in the news recently. I would like to think that they would treat Gordon Hayward a little bit different than the way they treated Isaiah Thomas, assuming that they knew things about Thomas's injury that were going to keep him out further. And even if they didn't know anything, even if they thought that Thomas could play through it and he would be fine to come back and play this year early on, I would like to think that after the way things happened with him, the Celtics would be a little bit more cautious with their golden boy now. Their 5 to 6 year project cornerstone guy that's supposed to be here to help you win an NBA championship, along with now Kyrie Irving, Al Horford, of course, I'll list them right down the line. Tatum, Brown, whoever you think is going to be here at that point in the next couple of years when the Celtics are actually contending. Be more cautious with this guy. Don't just roll him out there and assume that he's going to be fine and ready to go. You've got to be cautious because you can't take chances with things like this, in my opinion. But maybe they will. Maybe they'll push him out.
Speaking of Isaiah real quick, I know you said you weren't going to comment on him because he's not on the team, but he still seems pretty salty about getting traded.
Oh, man, is he ever.
Yeah.
And he'll say that answering questions, and people that defend him will say that he's just answering the questions that are asked to him. But I sometimes take those comments to be him sort of saying something that someone says, well, wait a minute, you just – sort of went in a different direction. I'm going to follow up on this. And then he really opens up on some of these questions. And I think that he really liked it here. And just from an outsider's standpoint, I have no inside information on this. It sounds like he enjoyed his time in Boston and he's still not over the fact that he's not playing here. And I think that maybe he doesn't actually know what it's like to play with LeBron James. He just sort of has been around the team and sort of maybe sees what's happening. But it just appears as though he is either worried or nervous that it's not going to be something that he wants or likes, and that he would prefer to be in Boston because he knows that he thrived here and that people loved him as a player. And maybe he's just uneasy about what's going to happen in Cleveland.
Is there any part of you that is concerned about this guy coming back, you know, and playing the Celtics in the playoffs and just being a Celtic killer? I know it's way too early to have this conversation, but I'm just curious.
No, I'm not worried about it because, you know what, I mean, I would still pick Cleveland in a 7-game series if it came down to it, the way it's set up right now. I think that Kyrie Irving needs to learn to be that closer and that killer, have that killer instinct. I think he's sort of there, but he shows lapses, you know. Isaiah Thomas pretty much showed it every single night as far as we saw. So between Thomas and LeBron James, I don't think the Celtics would be able to win that series. So I'm not worried about it. I think it's probably going to happen. But it's still way too early. You're right. And we're right up against it here. So that's okay. Going to do it. That's going to do it for
us
here on the CLNS Media Celtics postgame show. Thank you all for listening. Celtics win 102-91. They play again tomorrow night. They're going to be at home against James Harden and the Houston Rockets. Capella's out tomorrow, so that's good for the Celtics. We all know how they fare against big men, even though Capella, not exactly your traditional big man. We'll talk to you next time. Bobby Manning and friends, the Syracuse crew tomorrow night, Calvin. I hope you tune in. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a good one.
This has been the Celtics postgame show on CLNSradio.com. Thanks for listening. The Celtics might not be in action every day, but we are, so stay connected. Follow us on Twitter at CLNSRadio and check out our broadcast schedule for the best weekly sports podcasts on the web.